My dearest of friends, I am honored to once again welcome you to today's sermon. Out in the vastness of our galaxy, we will find a myriad of different worlds, each of which has been highly specialized to one specific purpose, deemed as being of the utmost necessity towards the continuation of the wider Imperium. Hive worlds act as the beating heart, populated by untold billions of humble citizens. Agri-worlds will feed these starving souls, and forge-worlds will churn away endlessly to produce the many industrial tools needed to sustain such a mighty stellar empire. But there also exists one rather curious class of planet, which somewhat falls out of the usual ruling system of the Imperium, and these would be known as the Night Worlds. Operating in a feudal manner, these planets once stood as shining beacons of technological ascendancy, having been founded during the glorious days of the Dark Age of Technology. Over the long millennia, perhaps more so than any other within the Imperium, they have retained many of the ancient gifts granted to them by the early pioneers of mankind. But there would be none more iconic nor powerful than of the venerable engines of war known as the Knights. These are gargantuan, walking effigies of humanity's strength, which will tower over near all other contraptions upon a battlefield, and from this lofty vantage point, their noble pilots will bring down a barrage of vengeance to any who dare stand against them. As it stands today, there are thousands of distinct noble houses to which each pilot will draw their lineage from, and these will be spread out across the many knightly worlds of the galaxy, having sworn their ultimate allegiance to either the High Lords of Terra or to the ruling technophants of the Adeptus Mechanicus. But we must understand that the knightly houses and their feudal worlds were not created in our recent history, and so their position within the Imperium did not always exist in this current form. These worlds and their houses are far more ancient than of many others within the galaxy, having been established long before the colonization of most of the home planets of the various chapters of the Adeptus Astartes. Even though they do indeed contain several prized relics from the Dark Age of Technology, it is important to note that their societies seem to have undergone something of a regression, with simple farming or mining techniques being used, which are somewhat reminiscent of the medieval period in Terra's bygone past. With this in mind, today we shall be learning of their history, beginning with their great rise to prominence within the stars. Firstly, we shall investigate their initial founding, where the ancient colony ships of man made their great mark upon the worlds which were destined to be claimed for the expansion of our species and later for the glory of the dynastic houses. After this, we will watch as the golden age of humanity rapidly fell to pieces and of how the knightly worlds survived and changed during the tumultuous age of strife. Finally, we will briefly look upon their state within the 30th millennium, where their presence first became known to the newly formed Imperium. But this introduction has gone on long enough. We will now be looking back through the long annals of time to hear of the first part in a series of tales, soaked in triumph and tragedy as we learn of the history of the Imperial Knights. To first understand the story of the knightly houses, we must learn of an ancient time, long before this apocalyptic era which we find ourselves in, and long before even the tumultuous days of the Horus Heresy, and this period would be known as the Age of Technology. It is important to briefly note that it was only coined as the Dark Age of technology as it came to its crashing end. But during its peak, it was nothing short of a golden era for mankind's place within the stars. Ranging from approximately M15 through to M25, this was where humanity first breached the borders of the Sol system and delved into the inky depths of space to claim all which they encountered as their galactic birthright. From their first success, our ancestors were propelled upon an unparalleled, momentous wave of expansion, with hundreds, even thousands of distant worlds being settled and colonized for the glory of all mankind. Furthermore, this great rush of colonial spirit brought with it a tremendous acceleration in the various scientific institutions centered upon old Earth. Standard template constructs, true artificial intelligences, and even the mysterious void ship engines known as warp drives were first developed and rolled out during this period, all of which only served to further push humanity into a veritable age of prosperity and glory. With all this in mind, however, we must understand that this early period of galactic history was not to be seen as peaceful nor safe for our ancestral relatives. Not only were they to be faced off against untold horrors which lurked out in the stars, but the colonists themselves would be expected to sail through the unfathomable depths of the void whilst retaining their sanity and holding true to their mission of expanding the burgeoning empire of mankind. Understandably, this was no small task, and so the first expansion fleets were sent in a manner most cautious, in such a way where the risks posed to the brave crews would be minimized to whatever extent was possible. But there could be no true assurances given to these pioneers, and so the many exploratory ships were sent out into the darkness as specks of hope dancing in a near endless abyss, carried by but the hopes and dreams that our species had held with it since it first turned its gaze into the glittering sky of the night. A great many of these ships were tragically lost in that yawning crevasse of the cosmos, falling victim to horrors so dark that the Inquisition has struck their name from all but the most secretive of records. Others, however, rather miraculously, did indeed locate worlds which harbored the potential to not only support human life, but that were so rich in resources that they could be used to further propel humanity out through the stars for many more years to come. Once these stellar coordinates were eventually relayed back to Terra, a most difficult decision had to be made. The early lords had to determine if this new planet was worth risking the lives of potentially millions of brave colonists for, and if it would be truly advantageous to the growth of humanity, or if it would simply accelerate the doom of our own species. But in this period of advancement and excitement in our own potential, the lords overwhelmingly agreed to settle almost every planet which had been scouted out, with their strategy consisting of settling as many worlds as possible in the hopes that if even a small percentage were successful, that this would be a fortuitous outcome for such a project. As such, it fell to the fleets of the Long March to venture out into the dark and to land upon these wayward worlds, all to bring them under the fold of humanity. These hulking armadas were made up of dozens of immense ships, the size of which dwarfed even the largest of cities still found upon Terra, and within, their bulkheads had been crammed with every resource needed to ensure the survival of the intrepid pilgrims, who boarded en masse to set out into the stars and forge a new home amidst the dark. Though their hearts were emboldened with hope, and though the adventurous spirit of mankind propelled them forward Once they finally made planetfall upon their destined world, the bleak reality of their situation quickly sunk in, and much of their colonial ambition died upon the forlorn rocks of their lonesome new homes. In order to first construct their settlements, the colonists would have to disassemble the ships of their fleet, forever locking them out of ever returning to Terra and condemning them to spend the rest of their lives upon this wayward planet. Not only was the psychological impact of this realization rather heavy for those who harbored a weaker constitution, but their position would soon be threatened by a far more tangible danger. The arrival of a great armada quite obviously would stir up a great deal of attention to this region of a world. And so, if any other species had already laid claim to the planet as their own, then quite often they would descend upon this landing site to purge the invasive humans from their own ancestral grounds. Aside from warring with the sentient species, or hostile animal life, which saw the colonists as nothing but a tasty treat to feast upon, many of these worlds were far from pristine examples of habitability, making the task of settlement even harder than of what was expected. Great storms of toxic gases, environmental storms which raged on for months at a time, and even earth-cleaving quakes were common hazards to be endured by these brave souls. Even with these unavoidable dangers, not all hope was to be lost by the adventurous humans. Within their deconstructed crafts were found to be artifacts known as standard template constructs, which could be used to analyze the resources of a world and would then utilize these raw supplies to quickly manufacture any essential tools, objects, or devices which were requested from the settlement. The scope of these templates truly reached almost no limit, with the colonists being able to produce anything from simple farming instruments or mining equipment through to great weapons and defensive fortifications needed to protect them from the elements. But the souls of humanity were not to be expected to defend themselves with small arms alone, as these templates could be used to construct one of the mightiest examples of human engineering, and these would be known as the Knights. Standing at near 40 feet tall, these titanic walking constructs were intended to be the single greatest asset available to the colonists of the Long March, with there being no doubt that they would be able to stride out across even the most hostile of worlds to purge those who would seek to bring about the downfall of these settlers. Clad in thick layers of adamantium and bolstering immense weapon systems, they were mechanical gods, so strong that even a single knight would be able to defend an early settlement from all which dared threaten its existence. In practice, they were unstoppable. Any dangers were quickly crushed under the titanic weight of the knights, which would continue to march forth to clear a wide enough area for the colonial settlers to lay claim to and expand their burgeoning settlement. Hostile encampments were burnt to cinders, dens of rabid animals were put down, and from their immense bulk, the knights were even able to assist in large-scale construction plans by moving objects which were simply beyond the capabilities of a humble human hand. In these early days, the pilots had been trained back on Terra, but they were still to be considered as colonists themselves. Though they had a vital role to play within the growth of their settlement, their societies still existed in a fairly egalitarian manner, with there being little to separate each individual from one another, other than of their current task. This, however, was not a system which would last forever. In order to bolster the effectiveness of a pilot within his suit, there existed a curious piece of software contained within the cockpits known as the Throne Mechanicum, which would partially meld the mind of the incumbent with the machine spirit of the knight, causing them to become innately tied to one another. Though this was indeed successful, with the advanced integration between man and machine aiding the pilots in best controlling their suits, there was another, secretive operation coded within the depths of this program. The scientists of Terra had devised to include a subtle mind alteration system within this software, which would silently influence the thoughts and morals of the pilot towards a framework which would be most beneficial to a growing colony. Their minds would be swayed towards the ideals of honor, duty, and nobility, mirroring the heroic knights who filled the ancient stories of medieval Terra. Though this did indeed spur the pilots towards defending their settlements with an increased fervor, it soon became clear that these injected thoughts were causing some unexpected effects. The change took generations to manifest, but slowly, the pilots of these knights began to see themselves as vaunted champions of order, who would give their very lives to defend the meek and helpless colonists around them. The settlers, meanwhile, similarly became enamored by the chivalry displayed by these heroic figures, and so their position within these young societies slowly grew, first from them acting as defenders of the downtrodden, all the way to the point where they now stood as the ruling class, whose word was cherished over all others. With this new image, the pilots needed a more formal way of distinguishing themselves from the rest of the colonial group, and so they formed the first quasi-dynastic noble households, which have persisted from this ancient period all the way up to the current day 41st millennium. In addition to this, the pilots and wider populace quickly realized that the duties of the knights should be focused purely upon the safeguarding and leadership of their settlements, where all major decisions would be taken by this new class of lords. As such, these settlements underwent a rather large schism, where one would either be a part of the noble knightly lords or as one of the subservient loyal servants who would hold their word as sacred law. Though some may see this feudal system as rather oppressive, in actuality, it was one which benefited all within the growing colonies. The knights were honor-bound to protect and serve their subjects, who in turn continued with their regularly assigned labors, which would have been performed regardless of the new societal shift. Thus, during this period of expansion, the knightly houses had been established, and the many colonies of man were thriving under their caring rule. But in the following millennia, this new system would be tested to its absolute limits, and the worlds who had not embraced the dynastic system of the knights would be forced to contend against the dark, with none to watch over them. The great age of technology had continued to progress, but with its ever increasingly rapid acceleration came a host of mortal dangers. Previously thought to be confined to the realm of scientific fiction, the vast think tanks of Terra had been successful in producing many wonders of technology, which none could have ever dreamed of bringing to reality. The ancient ships of the Long March, previously powered by relatively crude methods for interstellar transport, had now been replaced with void craft, which possessed warp drives and Geller fields, allowing them to slip into the chaos of the warp, to traverse that infernal hellscape unscathed, and emerge at their destination exponentially faster than if they had used conventional thrusters. As such, many more worlds of the galaxy had been seeded with adventurous colonists who were keen to bring about a new era of human conquest within the stars. But at this point, some of these decisions were not being made by the minds of man. One of the greatest breakthroughs in humanity's technological journey was of their creation of true free-thinking artificial intelligences, and these machine minds had been permitted to pervade near every aspect of human society, to to the point where AI conglomerates were now making many of the large-scale decisions of the young human empire. Hundreds of worlds voluntarily surrendered the vast majority of their autonomy to the emergent AI, seeing them as nothing but another tool to be used in the ascension of mankind from humble colonists up to galactic rulers. They did not perceive the new creations as being dangerous to any capacity, and so they foolishly believed that there could be no harm in watching them blossom and grow. Other planets, meanwhile, were shaken by the sudden awakening of many individuals who now arose as the first psychically attuned members of humanity. Though in these days, few understood what this truly meant, it was clear that these gifted few were able to influence reality by the exertion of their psionic will alone. Thus, from their newfound might, many of these young psychers were worshipped as the firstborn members of a new evolutionary leap for all mankind. Others, however, afflicted with their fears of the unknown, saw these new psychers as naught but witches who should be rounded up and purged, lest they test the safety which their society had built up for the prior millennia. Though this wave of technological and psychic advancement was indeed sweeping its way across the galaxy, there were a select few planets which did not fall to the shifting tides, and these would be none other than the Night Worlds. The ruling nobility and loyal classes of subjects had forged themselves a series of worlds which remained as steadfast beacons of stability in this ever-shifting environment of galactic progress. They had retained their founding desire to care for nothing but the protection and safeguarding of their own populace. And so the intrusive influence of AI or psionic prophets was seen as yet another threat to be swatted away, lest they endanger the growth of these humble worlds. It had become ingrained within the working populace that they should only look to the leadership of the knightly nobles for guidance, as danger could appear in any form at any time. And so they resigned themselves to simply tend to the needs of their own world, with no thoughts being given to the advancements out in the stars. As a result of these beliefs, their societies were still primarily directed and organized in a manner which reflected the early colonial systems from when the worlds were first settled, those long millennia ago. Because of this, the worlds of the galaxy, who had embraced the technological shifts of this era, looked down upon the nightly ruled planets, seeing them as backwards, stagnant hovels, which would remain as pathetic vestiges of ignorance, and who should be enlightened by any means necessary. As it would turn out, however, their ideals of preserving their old feudal way of life would in fact prove to be their salvation amidst the coming storm. None know of exactly when the age of technology reached its bloody end, but we can safely say that it was due to the weight of rogue, abominable intelligences, the occurrence of psychically tuned humans, and from the sudden outburst of hellish energies from the recently breached warp, which signaled the final death cry of this golden age. Such was the scale of devastation caused by this climactic disaster that this period was renamed as the Dark Age of Technology, and it was no longer seen as a time of glory, but as one marred by hubris and arrogance towards sciences which we should have never tampered with. In many ways, the galaxy had not experienced such an overwhelmingly destructive streak as this since the days of the ancient war in heaven, and imperial scholars have since coined the following millennia as the Age of Strife. Though the exact chronology of this period is debated, We can say that it began somewhere between M22 and M25, where it persisted until M30, when the dawn of the new Imperium was brought about by the God Emperor. More than anything else, we can define this time as being a period of horrific regression from the glory which had been built up during the Age of Technology, and much of the advancement which had previously propelled humanity through the stars was destined to be destroyed and cast to the cosmic wind as naught but dust. The free-thinking, abominable intelligences, possessing bodies of iron which they could control by their own will, rebelled against their creators, waging a bloody and relentless war across the stars. Every single world which had previously surrendered any semblance of control to the AI now found their homes in flames as the legions of robotic horrors marched out to position themselves as the cybernetic overlords of the void. Humans were not to be spared, and they had no role to play within the new mechanical reality which was to eclipse all others. Entire planetary populations were rounded up and exterminated, being slaughtered like cattle at such a scale that the warp itself did ripple and bubble from the new bountiful injection of terrified souls. But even with this new menace, mankind was not to go gently into that dying light. Utilizing the great armadas, doomsday weapons, and titanic armies at their disposal, humanity did indeed fight back against the mechanical horrors, but this itself did little but plunge the galaxy into a new scale of apocalyptic war, from where few would find salvation. This was not the sole catastrophe to strike during this time, as the recently awakened psychic population of mankind soon arose as a woeful threat to the safety of all. Very few knew of the powers contained within one who could attune their minds to the currents of the warp. And yet, during this time of chaos, it became clear to all that these individuals possessed the potential to stand as harbingers of death and destruction. Worlds were drowned in blood, spouted out from the eyes of tortured psychers who prayed for forgiveness for their own mutations, whilst other planets were ripped asunder by psionic warlords who sought to use their own powers to wrangle control of reality for their own wishes. Portals to the warp had begun opening up across the galaxy, with monstrous legions of demonic horrors bursting outwards to relish in the sanguine glory of reaping each and every foolish mortal they encountered. As a consequence of both the war against AI and of the losses sustained from the psionic uprisings, the warp was buffeted by an incomparable wave of emotional energies caused by the combined cries of an entire species suffering under the weight of war. Just as reality impacts the immaterium, so too will it respond and push back into our plane with an equal force, and this would prove to be the final crippling blow of the Age of Strife. The previously mentioned warp portals acted as the seeds which blossomed into system-spanning warp storms. Eclipsing entire constellations with their flowering spread, these chaotic vortices of writhing warp energy reached out and sucked in all of reality before spitting out torrents of immaterial flame, with not a care to be given for those who would be incinerated by its blare. Almost every planet of the young human empire was cut off and isolated from one another by the scale of these storms, meaning that none could possibly hope to communicate nor contact their lost brothers and sisters, who were most assuredly suffering on their own world. Within their own personal hells, their poor populace were trapped and left to the merciless whims of the demonic entities who would revel in devouring their delectable, terrified souls. But despite all of this horror and all of this death, there still existed a shining light in the chaotic darkness. The feudal night worlds had remained as an unshakable bastion of stability amidst the long night, and though their situation was still tenuous, none could deny that they seemed far more prepared than any other to endure the newfound nightmares of this era. As I previously mentioned, the knightly dynasties had almost universally rejected the technological advancements of the prior millennia, meaning that they were safe from the emergent threats of rogue AI rising up within their territories. Similarly, because most within the galaxy had looked down upon these worlds as being ignorant, backwards vestiges of a bygone age, it meant that very few of the contemporary threats of the Long Night even considered turning their attention to the night worlds, as they simply assumed the populations to have died out or regressed from their inability to adapt to the changing times. Due to their rather superstitious beliefs and apprehension towards accepting novel concepts or discoveries, it did in fact appear that those upon the night worlds were overwhelmingly in favor of banishing any who displayed the symptoms of this newfound psionic mutation. Though they were brutal, and in some cases rather cruel with their treatment of the Psykers, the Great Witch Hunts did indeed end up being yet another of the saving graces to bless the populace. Thanks to their actions, the night worlds were almost entirely safe from the threat of psychic uprisings, which, as we previously discussed, had brought about the downfall of hundreds or potentially even thousands of worlds found in the chaotic depths of space. Because of these reasons, the night worlds had become perhaps some of the safest of places within the galaxy, where the populations were still watched over by the benevolent nobility, and where all were dedicated to the simple act of serving their feudal masters and towards tending to their own flock. Even while the distant worlds of man were consumed by the fires of war, or devoured entirely by the encroaching horrors of the warp, the knightly houses were afforded with an opportunity to remain steadfast against the night, and within the darkness, they simply grew and further bolstered their defenses, just as they had since their first settlement all those years ago. As a consequence of their newfound stability, it did in fact seem that all of their superstitious and somewhat standpat of stances towards the shifting advancements of the galaxy had indeed proven to be their own lifeline within this time of darkness. This resulted in the reinforcement of their beliefs in that technological evolutions should be tempered, and that the psionic witches of humanity should be expelled wherever they are encountered. Additionally, the societies became far more insular than they ever had before. If the culture of the knightly worlds was to be seen as stagnant before, now it had ground to an all-out stop, with there being very little in the way of progression in any of the various artistic or scientific fields still practiced there. The feudal nobles, in the process of protecting their subjects, had further consolidated all power away from the subservient class, to the point where the opinions of any but the knights themselves was given very little thought. Although, as we discussed before, the vast majority of the population was in fact supportive of this measure. Though they had always been rather isolated from the rest of the young human empire, these night worlds still maintained constant trade routes and points of contact with their fellow worlds. However, during the Age of Strife, this naturally came to an end. The planets were forced to adapt their society in such a way where they could be entirely self-sufficient, where they would not be forced to rely upon the imports of other worlds in order to survive. With this new goal of self-reliance on their minds, and with their off-world access to food now being restricted, the populations resorted to simple, primitive farming methods, with great hand-plowed fields being worked on by hundreds, even thousands of humble laborers under the hot midsummer's sun. Some would compare their techniques to those used by the ancient farmers of Terra, and indeed, it did seem that the knightly citizens had found some form of peace in these old ways. Aside from this subservient class of laboring serfs and of the knightly lords, a third class had risen to prominence during this period, and it would be of the craftsmen whose sole task was of the maintenance of the great knights themselves. Without their artisanal care, the actual knights would have fallen to ruin eons ago, and so these engineers and repairmen soon found themselves in a rather lofty position, as it was partially by their hand that the honor-sworn knights could enact their protective duties. But with the knightly worlds now in this current state, their society remained almost frozen in time for the duration of the Age of Strife, with the nobles ruling over their feudal serfs, all of whom were grateful for the benevolent rule of their dynastic masters. Their days were spent toiling away with archaic methods, and although their lives were somewhat simple, there was a great deal of joy and satisfaction to be found from a day's worth of hard labor spent purely to aid those who dwelled within their communities. Truly, if the entirety of the galaxy had been occluded by the presence of violent warp storms for the rest of time, then those upon the night worlds would have remained in peace forevermore. But as we all know, the long night was not to last forever. And with the emergence of the Emperor upon Holy Terra, the stars were to be irrevocably changed, and the knights would soon be exposed to the wider galaxy, whether they liked it or not. At this point in our tale, the chaos of the warp storms which had feasted upon our galaxy for the past 5,000 years had now dissipated, and it was here, in this time of relative peace, that the age of the Imperium finally began. It was the 30th millennia. And though mankind had been buffeted by the arcing lashes of the Immaterium, from their near annihilation at the hands of the abominable intelligences and from the errant uprisings of rogue psykers, it did in fact seem that humanity had persevered and weathered this most terrible storm. Many worlds, however, despite still retaining a portion of their populace, were left in a state of desolation. The wars of the Age of Strife had reduced many vibrant worlds down to smoldering ruins, with there being not a single blade of grass able to stand tall amidst the ashes. The doomsday weapons of the Dark Age of Technology had been levied by the AI masses, and their wanton use had left a scar so terrible upon the collective psyche of humanity that it would likely never be forgotten for the rest of time. Those who had survived, hidden away in secretive bunkers, or who were simply lucky enough to avoid the gaze of the foul machines, were pushed into a state of paranoia at the dangers which technology may bring. They cared not for the fact that these breakthroughs had helped propel humanity through the stars. As for them, all they had witnessed was an apocalyptic war, which could only ever have been performed thanks to the careless production of cybernetic beings who lacked even a soul to call their own. And so, as a result of these conflicts, the human race collectively shifted away from seeing the boons brought about by technology. And instead, they only looked upon it with fear and suspicion. This was a viewpoint which would unfortunately become rather ingrained within both the newly emergent Imperium and of the Mechanicum upon Mars. Similarly, there was a newfound fear around those who had been touched by the gift of psionic might. Many worlds had been ravaged by errant psychic warlords, who could tear reality asunder in a wave of immaterial lightning, and these maleficent tyrants were all any could picture when they thought of the presence of a psyker. As such, witch hunts became rather common upon the worlds which fell victim to the evil whims of those warp-tuned individuals. Entire planetary governments had collapsed, with the citizenship finding no faith in the abilities of their pathetic leaders to ever be able to protect them from the myriad of horrors which lurked out in the depths of space. Insurrectionist uprisings and planet-spanning rebellions were incredibly common, leading to an ever-increased level of havoc and ruin within the already war-battered societies. For all of these reasons, many colonies, once seen as thriving, prosperous examples of glory, were reduced into feral worlds, ruled over by warring gangs of barbarians and warlords who could only think ahead to how they would survive the coming darkness of the night. But just as they had endured during the most dire of times during the Age of Strife, it was none other than the Nightly Worlds which had persevered as veritable jewels amidst this scattered and devastated galaxy. Their policies of self-sustenance had allowed them to feed their entire populations, who were each happy enough with their own stock in life to remain as faithful, loyal servants to the dynastic knights. Furthermore, many of the citizenship did not find any real reason to object to their rule. The knights had proven themselves as being more than capable enough to not only defend their society from outward terrors, but they had also directed it for the previous millennia, forging their planets into a position of relative safety and stability. Though yes, they did indeed share in the view that those with psychic powers should be expelled from their communities, this was simply seen as a necessary precaution to be taken against the mutants who may very well bring their planets to ruin. It is important to note here that whilst many night worlds did indeed survive unscathed from the prior time of apocalypse, it did not mean that they were all to be safe from its crushing presence. Though the insular conservative viewpoints of their societies helped some, there were many night worlds which suffered greatly from the inelastic rule of their noble lords. Some of the planets were not able to be harvested in such a way to make their settlements and towns self-sustaining. And indeed, the nobility was not looked upon so favorably by their subject populations when starvation and disease ran rampant. Similarly, though the guilds of craftsmen were incredibly skilled at repairing the actual knightly suits, it could never be expected for all of them to endure for the thousands of years since their first creation. Many of these venerable titans were damaged beyond all repair. And once the engines of war had finally sputtered out of life for the last time, then the worlds were left defenseless, and the horrors of the dark were free to claim each and every denizen while being faced with no opposition. Nevertheless, these lost worlds were simply exceptions, and the truth was that the Nightly Worlds had stood tall as proud, shining bastions in the darkness. Their noble knights, now standing as esteemed lords, still exemplified those old ideals of honor, duty, and sacrifice to one's people, and they were prepared to give their very lives if it meant that their homes may survive for but another day. The Nightly Worlds could have indeed endured in their simple state until the very stars themselves died, but the galaxy is never a place of stagnation, and with the unification of Terra within the 30th millennium, the sparks of the Great Crusade would soon grow into a raging inferno, and the knights would not be able to avoid being caught up in its coming gust. My friends, this shall conclude the first part of our story on the rise and fall of the Imperial Knights. Though there is still much to discuss in the long history of the Knights, I will soon return to tell of what happened when the sweeping wave of the Great Crusade first encountered these ancient vestiges of humanity, who had survived the darkness of the Long Night, thanks to the grace of their mighty war suits. After, it will finally be time to learn of how the fated events of the Horus Heresy impacted the Knightly Houses, and of where their true allegiances were ultimately thrown in this most bloody of civil wars. But, much like the cataclysmic period of the Age of Strife, this conflict was not to last forever, and indeed many of the knightly worlds persevered yet again. However, rather tragically, there was still a large proportion of these once loyal bastions of honor who succumbed to the siren song of the warp, and these houses have been forever lost, where they now stride through the immaterium as chaos knights, serving only the terrible powers of the dark gods forevermore. But, my friends, this shall all be covered in the near future, and I hope that you will join me for the final conclusion of this tale. I must thank each and every one of you for listening to this story in its entirety, and I truly hope that you enjoyed hearing of the fabled tale of the Rise of the Knights. For now, however, I must yet again close the chapter of this book, and as I leave, I wish you all goodbye.